Historically, throughout the country, child welfare has been neither adequately funded nor adequately staffed, according to a report by Science Direct. The result is the employment of well-intentioned staff, many of whom have no formal social work education, who end up working very heavy caseloads. It all leads to high turnover and lower quality services for people who truly need help. This hour, we meet two people who acknowledge the problems and are working to find solutions. Peggy Egan is the relatively new director of the Mecklenburg County Department of Social Services. She has partnered with Dr. Bob Herman Smith of UNC Charlotte to study ways to retain social workers and offer critical support to those workers in order to provide or improve the quality of care for area families and lengthen the careers of the social workers themselves. Dr. Herman Smith is an associate professor and graduate program director at UNC Charlotte School of Social Work, and both he and Peggy Egan join us for the hour. Welcome to the program.
Thank
you.
Good morning.
You've been here 16 months as the social services director, and this is your first time here.
It is.
What is wrong with us?
You should have invited me sooner.
well, you're welcome anytime.
Thank you.
According to UNC Charlotte, our community and our nation are experiencing an expanding role of social work and social workers in a variety of fields. Why the sudden need, extended need, for social workers?
Well, I believe that we have determined that there are lots of problems that people are really struggling with, and that what social workers do are identify the problems people are struggling with and then help them walk through that. I think we as a society have decided that people can't just do it on their own, that society is so complex that they need someone to sort of lead them through. And that's the role of a social worker.
Yeah, you replaced a previous director at DSS who was fired because of a number of problems there, including low staff morale and high turnover, and the fact that the DSS failed to pass a federal review measuring how well the department prevented abuse or neglect. You've been on this job now for 16 months. You're fixing, are fixing the problems that existed prior to your arrival a long-term process, or have you made great strides, do you think? How would you assess it?
I would say we've got a good start. The problems that we did find are problems that have not only plagued Mecklenburg County, but the state of North Carolina and the country. You mentioned the federal review. Actually, no state or jurisdiction in the country passed that. So it's not just a Mecklenburg County problem. It's a general problem. But I really think that it's something that is going to take a while, because part of it is culture. Changing a culture takes time.
Mm-hmm. Are social workers, who do they work with primarily?
You know, the great thing about social work is that you work with all kinds of people. And so in our Child Protective Service area, for instance, they work with children and they work with families. In our Adult Protection Service area, they work with the elderly or adults who have various problems. You find social workers in hospitals. You find social workers in hospice. You find social workers working with veterans. I'm sure, Bob, you've got some other ideas about where social workers are.
Yeah, the School of Social Work has been really active in the community, working on issues such as homelessness, homelessness among elders, homelessness among families. We work with substance abuse. We work in healthcare. We work with veterans. There's a large role for social workers to play in veterans who are returning from Iraq and Afghanistan right now. So it really is a pretty wide open field. There's a prediction that we'll need the social work profession is going to need to grow by at least 25% in the next decade.
Why?
Because people are experiencing problems that are very complex. They need assistance with things like, for example, if you're a veteran, accessing health care, being able to get counseling, crisis intervention, there many of the veterans who are returning have post-traumatic stress disorder, need someone to assist there. Many times they come there, and their families are struggling as well.
So when you talk about the 25% increase in the need for social workers in the next several years, is it because of the veterans, mostly because of veterans returning from the conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, or are there other things going on in the country that have led to this increased need?
Well, there are lots of things going on in the country.
I guess my question is, what is it about society in the early part of the 21st century that is so much more in need of social workers than in the later parts of the 20th century or the mid part of the 20th century?
Well, let me give you an example. I'm from a rural area. I grew up on Hog Hill, close to Cat Square, North Carolina. That's beside a plateau. I'm sure you've heard of the Tri-City area. For example, my great-grandmother was a pregnant teenager. She got married when she was 16. She started having babies when she was 17. But at the time, she had family around to support her. All the family went to the same church. They lived in the same area. There was someone down the road who could pick up the slack, say, you know what, this is what you should be doing with this baby. And so those natural supports were there. Mm-hmm. Now we have people, for example, in Charlotte, who move here from all over the country. They leave those natural supports behind, and they get here and maybe experience one layoff, or get someone in the family get sick, and suddenly the need for those supports is there, but the support is not there. It's somewhere else. So it's kind of it's really the way that we live today, where people have a lot of mobility and we move around. I have to admit that I grew up in the country, and what I noticed living in Charlotte, I really don't know my neighbors that well anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I'm particularly shy. We just don't have a lot of social opportunity to get together. So we live in that kind of disconnected way, and so someone needs to come in and pick up the slack.
Okay. We're going to talk a lot in this hour about child protection workers. For those people who don't know really what they do, tell us how does it work? What do they do? How do they interface with children that they deal with? How do they interface with the families? How do they make decisions about what needs to happen?
Well, first of all, it's a requirement that if you suspect abuse or neglect, you are to make a report.
That's for average citizens or for
average
social workers?
For average citizens. Mm-hmm. That's how we keep children safe. People all across the community see children that we might not see. Mm-hmm. So reporting is the first thing. And so we take those reports, about 800 of those a month, and we then are required by law to investigate. And we start, of course, by just looking at the situation. We talk to the family. We talk to collaterals, school teachers, anyone who did report, people who know the family, and look to see if it truly is abuse or neglect. And if it is, then we go the next step, which is making sure that the child is safe. And at that point, the court gets involved.
How do you determine what is neglect and what is poverty? They're not neglecting the child. Maybe the child is undernourished because there's simply not enough money to feed that child.
That's a really good question, and that's one of the challenges of being a social worker, particularly in child protective services, because poor people can raise children and can raise children well. Mm-hmm. We also know that there are resources in our community. Again, that's what social workers do, is connect people to resources. So if it's really just an issue of a family not having resources, then we can reach out and connect that family to the resources they need. Sometimes it's food. Sometimes it's help with an electric bill or a heating bill. Sometimes it's a housing issue. Mm-hmm. So that's some of the services that we can give. And people don't really think about child protective services giving services of that sort, but that's certainly our intent, is to keep families together and make them healthy while protecting the child. I think there's a fallacy that, it's our job to go in and take children. And in fact, there's a part of the population who believe that we should be grabbing children. If a family's not taking care of them, take those children away. We want to keep families together when we can, but we also, our primary focus is the safety of the child.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say also that the research shows that just grabbing a child, taking them out of the home is not always the best solution. I know that in Mecklenburg County and other departments of social services that I work with in other states and locally, most children are not taken out of the home. The workers work very hard to keep those families together. It's very costly to take children out of the home. And not only that, but many times the children will wind up in a foster care system where they just sort of stay and they drift. And that's absolutely the worst thing almost that could happen to a child. So severe abuse, neglect, yes, that's a problem. But taking the child out of the home is not always the right solution.
According to The Observer, in December, DSS and its Youth and Family Services struggled with a backlog of 305 cases, down from 638 in the previous February. 2 weeks ago, the backlog had dropped to about 170. That sounds like great progress is being made. What does a backlog of 170 cases, though, mean to social workers and to their clients?
Well, and what it means is the state has mandated timeframes in which investigations have to be completed, 30 days or 45 days, depending upon the issues that the families are facing. And so one day past that 30-day or 45-day timeframe turns that case into a backlog. So the backlog just means we have not completed the investigation in a certain amount of time.
But the backlog, does that mean when a case comes off the backlog, does that mean the case has been investigated and it's completed, or that simply that the case has been opened?
No, the investigation has been completed, and either the case has been closed, mm-hmm. or it's been referred for services, or it's taken farther along the process and possibly referred to court.
And if I understand this correctly, that you have decreased the backlog of cases even as the requests for services, the need for services has been rising.
That's correct.
How have you been able to do that?
By amazing work of our staff, by them staying late, by them working on Saturdays. We've pulled people who used to work in our Child Protective Services but are now placed in other parts of DSS off their normal jobs and assigned them for a time period into Child Protective Services. And so our intent is to catch up the backlog. We've implemented some changes so that we hope we don't see the backlog continue to grow. And then we'll continue to move forward.
There has been an infusion of money, I think. Some extra money from the state came in to allow you to hire some additional workers. But social workers investigating family intervention cases, I understand it, continue to have to handle more than 10 cases per social worker, which is what the state recommends. If the state knows that, and it's not just DSS here, it's everywhere in the state of North Carolina, if they know that the need is rising and they know that you can't keep up with their own recommendations, why are they reluctant to give you more money?
Well, I think we'd have to ask the legislature that question. And part of it is that we are seeing both reports and abuse and neglect increasing in our community, in our state, and across the nation. And no one really knows really why that's happening.
Peggy Egan is the director of Mecklenburg County Department of Social Services. She and Dr. Bob Herman Smith are working together. He's at UNC Charlotte on a survey or study of DSS and how to improve services and the quality of those services. We'll talk about that when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Signature Healthcare Concierge Medicine, with offices in Uptown and South Park, providing patients with 24/7 physician access, personalized executive health care, and same-day appointments. 704-554-8787. And the U.S. National Whitewater Center, featuring over 25 outdoor activities, including whitewater rafting, mountain biking, zip lines, and more, throughout the year. Details at usnwc.org. Well, have you noticed the number of apartment buildings sprouting up all over the place? How could you not? They're everywhere. Charlotte is experiencing an apartment boom. We got 10,000 units currently under construction and going online. Another 10,000 are being planned. It's an all-time high. And we're going to talk about what's going on, why, and what it all means tomorrow at 9.
A On the next Diane Rehm Show, Verizon has unveiled a new cable TV package that lets consumers choose the channels they want. Consumer demand for choice, high-speed internet availability, and the shakeup in cable TV.
Join the conversation on The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about social work and the need for social workers and the need for more of them as the need for what they do has increased and will continue to do so. And the fact that Dr. Bob Herman-Smith and Peggy Egan are working together on this study conducted by UNC Charlotte to figure out what is needed and what to do and what the solutions to these problems are. Peggy Egan is director of Mecklenburg County Department of Social Services, and Dr. Herman-Smith is an associate professor of the graduate program and graduate program director in the Department of Social Studies at the UNC Charlotte. You have a backlog of 170 cases. Does that mean 170 active cases, or are there more active cases in addition to the backlog? I'm trying to get an idea of what the burden here is.
Oh, there are more active cases than the backlog. And in fact, we have about 700 children in our care that we're actually guardians.
And that's
for.
Just in child. The backlog is 170 cases in Child Protective Services?
That's correct.
What's it like in other areas of DSS?
Well, other areas don't have the same limitations of time.
Okay.
So the backlog is specifically to Child Protective Services. As far as other reports, we are seeing increased reporting for Adult Protective Services.
Mm-hmm.
That continues to grow. And one of the things we talked about earlier is, why are we needing more social workers? We're seeing the elderly population grow at astronomical rates. In fact, some people call it the silver tsunami.
Wow.
Because as the baby boomers are moving into their aging years, we're going to have more and more disability and more need for services.
Wow. So when a social worker gets a case, what does it mean to handle that case? What is involved, whether it's in Child Protective Services or in other areas of DSS? I'm a social worker. What do I have to do?
Well, first of all, you have to go out and investigate.
How dangerous is that in some cases?
It can be very dangerous. In fact, I just heard someone say, you know, it's surprising to me that we don't consider Child Protective Service workers as first responders, just as our firemen and our policemen are, because they go out into homes where, let's face it, most people don't want to see social services knocking at your door.
Well, I was going to ask you, particularly in the case of Child Protective Services, where you get a report, an anonymous report or a report from somebody who identifies themselves about possible abuse or neglect, and you confront, you show up at the door, you make a phone call, and you confront the person who may or may not be responsible for that abuse or neglect. What's their reaction likely to be?
Sometimes they're not very happy with us. But that's part of the training that's so important, and part of why it, not only is it important to hire social workers, but have the time to train them well and supervise them closely.
So they're kind of like first responders. They're also kind of like private detectives or detectives, are they not?
Well, to some degree, yes, investigators. And the focus, though, is what's happening with a child. You know, is the child safe? Are there resources around that child for making sure that whatever that child needs, whether it's food, whether it's supervision, whether it's getting to school, whether it's getting to medical care, a child needs so much. And oftentimes we find that families are either struggling themselves,
mm-hmm,
or they really don't know what it means to take care of a child. Bob talked about the fact that his grandmother was pregnant as a young woman, but there were people around to help her. Well, often those people don't exist anymore. And so we send very young people home with babies every day in this community and this country. And what we don't do is prepare them to be parents.
And so what you're saying is, in many cases, when you go out and investigate abuse or neglect, it's not because they're doing something purposeful. They just don't know any better because they have no role models and no one to say, that's not how you do that.
Often that's the case.
We're going to talk about why there is such high turnover in social work, not just here, but nationwide. It's not a... It's not a long-term job for a lot of people. There's a lot of burnout. We're going to talk about why that is, but I want to talk about what the result of that is first for the clients. And you've done research on how abuse of children impacts their brains, particularly at a young age. So if they're not getting the kind of help because the experience of the social worker isn't there, or there's a high turnover of those people and there's no through line of help, that impacts those children even worse. What does happen to a child at an early age who's been abused?
Well, first of all, I want to say that of all the kids who come into the attention of Department of Social Services, the majority of them are under 3 years old. And when the brain is fully formed by the time a child is four, in terms of the kinds of neuronal activity, in terms of the kinds of capacity that they have to learn. So what happens in the first year, 3 years of that child's life is very, very important. Now, there are actually studies out there where you can actually trace what happens. If a child experiences trauma, by the time that they're three, their brains look a lot smoother, and you don't want a smooth brain. You want one with lots of wrinkles in it, because the wrinkles means that there have been more connections and more differentiation in the brain. So so trauma stops that process. Now, as you get older, you can overcome some of those deficits, but it becomes very, very difficult. Most children who are poor start kindergarten a year to a year and a half behind their peers who are not poor.
So what you're saying is that early abuse or trauma in a child leads to things – will have a disproportionate effect on what happens in their brain. It could lead to poor school performance. It can lead to poor mental health. It can lead to poor physical health.
It does.
Which could last into adulthood. This seems to me to have a tremendously high societal cost.
It does. There's a recent study, the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study, or the ACE study, which has actually followed children over the life course. And it's very clear that very early trauma is associated with poor mental health, poor school performance, poor physical health. There are ways that you can intervene and make a difference in the lives of these children. And one of the primary things that you can do is to provide some preschool, especially preschools that involve parents in actually coming into the school, getting educated with the child, and participating in that. There have been a couple long-term studies like the Apicidarium Project in Chapel Hill that shows that if you provide support to children who are poor and even children who have experienced trauma, that when you look down the road, these are children who, as teenagers, are less likely to get pregnant, less likely to be involved with the criminal justice system, less likely to have mental health problems. They have better health. If they've gone to a good preschool program, they have better health. They have higher earnings, and they also graduate high school at a higher rate.
So has anybody done a cost analysis of what it would cost if we provided adequate social work to intervene in situations where it's necessary and cut all this off at the pass, versus letting it go because we didn't have enough social workers or enough time to deal with the real problem, and these kids end up with psychological or physical problems or criminal problems that we have to put them in jail later on in life. Has anybody done the cost analysis?
They actually have. Yeah. And let me just say that it's not just social workers intervening, but it's the community embracing families. And there's a whole area of prevention that we have not invested in this community or in this state much at all. And prevention of abuse and neglect, the latest research I've seen, and Bob may have seen something since then, for every dollar spent on child abuse prevention, we save $3 downstream.
So when you tell this to policymakers, does it fall on deaf ears? Do they realize it? Do they believe you?
I think that they do. I think that increasingly there's awareness that early childhood is a critical period in life, and what happens then has a long-term impact. Because the research is coming from all kinds of sources. For example, there's a initiative through people associated with the military called Mission Ready. And that talks about the need for early childhood intervention, because that is going to improve school performance. And then they're going to eventually be able to recruit people into the military who have the skills that they need to have. The military is increasingly a place where you have to have a pretty good education in order to do a good job. There's a fellow at University of Chicago named James Heckman, and he's an economist, and the University of Chicago School of Economics is sort of a rightward-leaning school of economics. Mm-hmm. And he has done some research and found that of all the possible investments that society should be making right now, he looked at things like, well, should we fix the potholes, or should we be building bridges, or what is it that we should be doing? And his conclusion was that if you really want to make a difference, and if you want to save money in the long term, you invest in early childhood. You invest in programs that support children birth to five. And that's going to move us all forward. And he's been very influential.
And this is outside of your area of expertise, I'm sure. But I'm going to ask the question anyway, because when things boil down to money, people get very antsy because it means, oh, more taxes to pay. But does it necessarily mean more taxes, or does it simply mean moving a pot of money from maybe from the prison system into early childhood education or into social work to help them intervene more effectively and more quickly so that these kids don't end up in prison down the road? Is it just a matter of robbing Peter to pay Paul, or do you have to have more revenue to do it?
I think initially you might have to have more revenue to do it, because there are still people who are going through the system who, for example, adolescents who didn't get a lot of that support when they were younger, right. And you still have to deal with them right now. But over the long term, you do save money. Just like with the Department of Social Services, if you bring people on and if you train them and give them support, if you could support the workers for about 2 years, like slowly build their caseload, coach them in terms of the things that they need to do for the job, they tend to stick around. If you don't do that, then most of the time, by two and a half years, they're out.
On Tuesday night, Peggy, you told the Mecklenburg County Commissioners that the turnover rate for social workers is between 32% and 44%. That sounds enormous.
And that's a state number, not a county number.
Okay.
And it is enormous. And it's one of the big challenges, because we know the longer social workers stay in the job, the better they become at the job. The more they know the resources of the community, the more they understand the nuances of the work that they do. And so it really behooves all of us to hire the best people for the job and keep them as long as we can.
So if those are state numbers, what are the numbers here?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't have that number, okay, which is one of the reasons it wasn't in the report. And turnover is one of those sort of squishy numbers, mm-hmm, because when people get promoted, is that part of turnover? When people move from one department within one division of DSS to another, is that turnover? So pinning that number down has not been as easy as we would have liked.
So some of it could be promotion or moving from one division to another. Some of it could be because of low morale, because of burnout, because of low pay, because of other career opportunities, because people are tired of beating their heads against the wall.
And because this is a job that takes an emotional toll. As much as we hope we find families that need some support to do better, sometimes we find families where children just are not taken care of and sometimes hurt. And when that happens, that's emotionally very traumatic for a worker.
So are there social workers to help social workers? Is there help for those people, counseling for those people, so that they can get their heads back together?
Actually, Mecklenburg County has an EAP program that all employees can access. There are some trauma-informed processes that we are looking at and putting in place for our workers.
Would that be something new, or has that been something that's been around but simply not known by social workers?
It's relatively new, and how we implement it across the whole department would be new.
Every organization will tell you that turnover is highly inefficient and very expensive. What does it cost? What does a high turnover rate cost an organization like yours?
Well, some people believe that it takes at least 6 months to catch up when you've lost someone, because the hiring process, mm-hmm, is costly. There's mandated training both from the state and within Mecklenburg County for the employees. And then there's the ramp-up time. You talked about the caseload recommendation is 10, but we would never bring a new social worker in and give them 10 cases right off the bat. We would start with one or two and let them sort of cut their teeth, mm-hmm, and be closely supervised and coached along the way, and then slowly add up to that. But when they're only taking one or two cases, other social workers then have to pick up the slack. So that only increases the stress and the demand on those social workers.
And I saw some research the other day that talked about the fact that when child protection service workers do leave, that you spend about 70% of what you would have paid in salary just in terms of recruiting, you know, hiring and initial training.
What's that number again?
About 70% of their salary.
70%.
So. Yeah. So you're not saving any money when social work, when child protective service workers leave. You know, it's going to cost you a lot of money.
And I read a report that it's particularly good. Retention of child welfare staff is particularly important during the early years of employment. Mm-hmm. If you agree with that, why is that so? Why the early years?
Well, I think because that's when you really are learning your job. And if they stay, then after the first couple years, maybe 3 years, then they really hit their stride and they're doing excellent social work. And they're also much more efficient. But in the early years, they're coming along. Mm-hmm. If they leave then, they usually go and do something else, not child welfare support.
I said in the beginning of the program, according to national figures, across the nation, many social workers come to their jobs with no formal education in social work. Is that the case here?
That is not the case here. We look for social work degrees, both undergraduate and graduate degrees. We will hire someone who doesn't have a social work degree, but we expect them to have a certain number of educational credits in social work or human development.
Now, UNC Charlotte is not the only school in the country with a social work major and master's degrees in social work. Are there enough people coming into social work degree programs across the nation to supply the need for those people in the workforce?
I would say no right now. And part of it is social workers tend to come from backgrounds where they don't have a lot of money. They understand what it's like to struggle, and they come to get their degree. And it's really challenging today because lots of people leave. I think we graduate some folks who are leaving with $30,000, $40,000 in student loan debt because they tend to come from backgrounds where they don't have a lot of family financial support to help them through. And I think that while we have people who have that kind of debt, there are lots of other people who would love to come into the field, but they just simply can't afford it. And tuition keeps rising. The amount of debt that students have to go into to get their degrees keeps rising. And so it just is starting to push some people out. So no, I would like to see us expand our programs, but we're at capacity. Every year we're at capacity in terms of the number of students that we can take. We would love to be able to take more.
Wow. And I guess it's easy to place those people when they graduate, it would seem to me, right?
It is. Yeah. Most of our graduates have jobs within 6 months or within 6 months of when they start looking. As a matter of fact, I don't really know how many, but there are several students who are about to graduate in May, and they already have jobs.
Dr. Bob Herman-Smith, who is Associate Professor and Graduate Program Director at UNC Charlotte School of Social Work. They're doing a study along with the local DSS, Mecklenburg County DSS, about how to improve services. Peggy Egan is the Director of DSS here, and she's with us as well. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Jazz Arts Initiative. Grammy winner Delfeo Marsalis plays music of jazz icon Duke Ellington April 30th for a Jazz Appreciation Month celebration at Blumenthal's McGlowan Theater. Tickets available at blumenthalarts.org. And Carolina Pest, celebrating 76 years of protecting homes and businesses in the area, offering environmentally responsible options for termite and pest management services. Details at carolinapest.com. Verizon has unveiled a new cable TV package, which you can't get, and that lets customers choose channels they want. On the Diane Rehm Show today in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, they explore consumer demand for choice, high-speed internet availability, and the shakeup in cable TV. That's coming up on WFAE. If you'd like to join our conversation, Charlotte Talks at WFAE.org. Send us an email there or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming right back.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
Follow your heart and follow your religion, but honor the culture, the heritage, and the values of our society.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
He thought young black men should know how to react if stopped by the police. An officer should know how it feels to be stopped.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about social work today. Peggy Egan is with us, the director of Mecklenburg County's Department of Social Services, and Dr. Bob Herman Smith with UNC Charlotte School of Social Work. A survey by the National Child Welfare Workforce Institute says that the average income for a social worker is in the low to mid $30,000 range nationally. And when Dr. Ronald Carter, who is the president of Johnson C. Smith University, was on this program about a month ago, somehow this topic came up, and he said, social people who go into social work know they're entering a field where the pay is low. Surely that must keep a lot of people who would be very good at this job out of these jobs.
Well, I want to make an important distinction here, and that is that a survey is talking about child protective service workers, and there are other states that actually pay lower than what the salaries are in North Carolina, unfortunately. But there's a distinction between child protective services and social workers. So social workers are people who have a degree in social work, and we often refer to people in child protective services as social workers, but you don't have to have a degree in social work to get those jobs.
Why not? Because
not necessarily in Mecklenburg, where I think they've done a better job of recruiting people with social work degrees, but across the country with these kind of turnover rates, if you wait to only hire people with social work degrees, you're not going to be able to fill those jobs. Mm. And you're going to have people – you're going to have even more of them unfilled. The problem is, though, if you do hire people without social work degrees into these jobs, many times that's a risk, because many times they don't stay.
Yeah.
And they don't have the training that's needed to make sure they do the job.
Right.
Well.
That's why they don't stay, because they don't have the training.
How have you been able to do it here?
Well, one of the things is that we really believe in interns, and we do take interns from UNCC and other universities all around us. In fact, sometimes quite far away, folks want to come to Charlotte for internships. I believe this semester we have 29 interns. So we look to those interns when they finish their term with us. They now know about us. They know about our services. And we try to hire those people. We also pay more. We start people in the mid-50s.
Are you in the exception to the rule in North Carolina in having a lot of people, particularly in child protective services, who are degreed in social work? Are you the exception to the rule?
I don't know that.
They are. I can answer that. Yeah, okay. They are. I think other counties, especially in very rural parts of the state, really struggle a lot more with that.
Because a national survey say that overall performance of those with master's degrees in social work is significantly higher than those without, and that those holding a master's in social work, the fact that they hold that degree, is the best predictor for overall performance, particularly in child welfare work.
Exactly. And the problem is that someone with an MSW has so many options now.
Yeah.
You can go into private psychotherapy. You know, you can go to work with veterans. You can work with the homeless. You can work in child welfare. So there are lots of options for people with that degree. And just to kind of plug my program, UNC Charlotte, you know, we have a very highly ranked program. We're one of the highest ranked programs in social work that doesn't have a PhD. Hmm. So we also, that's another thing that sort of drives the competition for the few slots that we have.
But if a job pays $30,000 a year, and you said yours is about 50, but if it pays $30,000 a year, and you're going to leave college in many cases with $30,000 in debt, how it doesn't take a math genius to figure out that is not a very good investment. How do you convince people to stick with the major, to stick with that as a career?
Well, I'd know the figure that you're citing, and I would quibble with that figure about the salaries. I think that most of our graduates, I don't know exactly, but most of them are going to start out, you know, at least $40,000 a year somewhere. And so I just think that particular figure is really low.
Well, I have sheaves of paper here, and I can't find exactly where it is, but I know that we're kind of in the middle of the pack in terms of pay, that
right.
Buncombe County, Asheville, pays more than Mecklenburg County does in the Department of Social Services. And the figure that I read was in the mid-30s here and higher in Buncombe County. How are you coming up? Why does that survey or that information tell me that it's way lower than what what you're saying it is?
I'm not sure. And actually, our numbers.
I wish I could find it.
I think that's a national survey that you're citing, okay. And that's the one that I quibble with.
Okay.
And the data's pretty old.
Okay.
And social work salaries have increased in the last decade. And the information they were using was from around the year 2000.
Okay. And one of the things that it did say was that because Buncombe County pays more, and it's kind of like the teacher situation, they are able to lure away from other counties in the state good people because they pay more. And as other studies will cite, job satisfaction of social workers in non-urban counties is higher than the job satisfaction in an urban county.
Which makes sense,
yes.
Because you think about what it means to go into a home in an urban community where you're not known, where you don't necessarily know what's going on in that particular community, that can be a scary situation. Mm-hmm. Where in a rural county, often everyone knows who the DSS workers are and, in fact, look out after them. But I think there's something else here that needs to be brought out, and that is that social workers are a rare breed. And both in Dr. Herman Smith's report and in the national literature, pay salaries are several steps down when you ask social workers what are important in their job.
Well, you've said that people who go into social work don't do it for the money. They do it as a mission to help others.
And they have the heart.
But you got to eat.
You do have to eat. And certainly at some point it matters. And certainly at some point if, you know, this county's paying $10,000 less than the one next to it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take a lot of effort to, you know, cross county lines. But I think we have to weigh what the mission is for the job versus what the pay is. Now, I'm a social worker. I employ social workers, and I'd love to pay them what they're worth. But it would take a lot of money to pay them what they're really worth.
There are pressures on this job because there's so much to do and so many cases that have to be handled by not enough people. That's a pressure. Not making what you're worth is a pressure. High turnover rate and having to deal with other people leaving in the office because they can't do it anymore is a pressure because you have a greater caseload yourself. And then, particularly in child protective services, it seems to me, you are making incredibly important decisions, life or death decisions in some cases. If you make the wrong decision, a child could be hurt, a child could die, only because you didn't have time to adequately think it through or you simply made the wrong decision. That has to be very stressful.
It is very stressful, and it's not just about you didn't have enough time or you didn't think it through. We also can't predict human behavior.
Sure.
If we only had a crystal ball to give to every social worker, everyone's lives would be better. But everything can line up and look like this is a child that is safe, and then the parent does something wrong. And the child's in trouble.
And let me say also that social workers don't do a good job of advocating for themselves sometimes. One of the things that I had recommended to Mecklenburg County Department of Social Services is be careful that you're protecting folks' confidentiality. But get on Facebook and get on Twitter. I would recommend to Peggy, and I haven't said this to her before, but it came to me yesterday when I was talking to some folks that work for her. Every unit in the Department of Social Services should be able to cite three things that they do well anytime on command. If someone walks up to them with a microphone, if someone comes from the county commission, if someone, just anyone from the public comes up, what is it exactly that you do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we do three things well. And if you could, what I would recommend is for them to be able to name those things. And you really need to have about 75% agreement about what those three things are. Because social workers, they really give a lot. They don't always ask for a lot back. And I think that it's time for people who are in that field to say, this is what we're all about. And these are the things that we do well.
There was a report published by the National Association of Social Workers that says, if you're right for the job, it's the best job in the world. So as you assess social work majors at UNC mm-hmm. Charlotte, as you assess applicants at DSS, how do you determine if those are the right people for the job?
Well, for me, it's all about attitude. aptitude is important, but attitude is the most important. They have to have a servant leadership heart. They have to want to do what they do because they think it's the right thing and that serving others is the best gift that they can get back.
Right. And then also, I think that when it comes to a particular job, it's really good. One of the things that I've recommended to Department of Social Services, and I know that they're already working on this, is to be real about what the job is about. I've suggested that they use realistic job previews, which are videos of workers who are actually in the field, maybe 10 to 20 minutes worth. And any applicant for the job should have the opportunity to see the video of workers who are in the field and to be honest about what is required. There are people who want to do this kind of work. There are other folks who sign up for the job and think, oh, it sounds great. I'm going to go save kids. And they have no idea what's involved in it. So if you're honest up front.
So you've been conducting this study, looking into the retention of social workers in Mecklenburg County. What have you found out so far?
Well, I've found out that Mecklenburg County is not alone in having the retention problem. Actually, it's a little bit better than it is in some parts of the country. I think in part because they're using social workers with social work degrees and they have some great supervisors who provide support for those people.
What seems to be the biggest cause for turnover in Mecklenburg County?
In Mecklenburg County? Mm-hmm. This is the case nationally. Supervisor, supervisor, supervisor. It all comes down to the supervisor. If you have a supervisor who can help you learn what to do on the job and can provide you the support, you're more likely to be one of those people who stay. I'm not saying that there are terrible supervisors in Mecklenburg County. Actually, the fact that Mecklenburg County's turnover rate's a little bit better than some places suggests that they have some talented folks who are supervising. But in every national study, and even locally, when we did focus groups with the Child Protective Service workers, they said, I have a quote, people at DSS don't leave their jobs. They leave their supervisors. So it really comes down to supervision and providing support for those supervisors to do a good job.
And training.
Yes.
I think you've recommended I've forgotten the figure now, but when I read it, I thought, wow, that would be a lot of training. What are you recommending for supervisors?
Well, I think that the next phase of our research is going to look at some particular models of training that might be available to them because we all have been trained, including me, you know, I'm getting older now. I came through school and through the university when the professor talks and you sit there and you take notes. Well, that's also the model that people use with a lot of their supervision is I'm going to tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. Now I want you to go do it. Mm-hmm. But actually a much more effective way is to actively involve the person that you're training or the person that you're teaching by doing things that they're going to have to do on the job, by practicing, by saying, okay, I've told you about this. Now I want to see you do it. Okay, now I'm going to give you feedback on how you did. Now we're going to practice it again. Really like you would do in a sport when you're learning to play softball or soccer. You have someone who gives you, okay, this is step one. Now we're going to go to step two.
How easy or difficult is that to implement, given the workload you already have, to take a person out and give them additional training on a regular basis? Because I think the report recommended regular training, and I thought, how could you even figure out what to do from week to week? How difficult it is?
It is difficult, and what it's going to mean is we're going to have to staff up even further, because anytime you take people out of rotation, somebody else has to take care of those cases. Actually, I often wonder, has anyone invented a stop button? Because we could sure use a stop button if we could just push stop for a week or two and not have all the phone calls and all the cases. Then we could bring people in for training. But unfortunately, the cases continue to come when the workers are out.
Well, the report also recommends something that makes a lot of sense, but it also costs money, and that is to bring in non-professional support staff to do a lot of the paperwork and some of the administrative tasks that have to be handled by social workers who could best use their time helping the people. But that costs money. Is there money for that?
It does cost money, but those staff would be less costly than social workers. So one of the things that we'll be looking at as we're putting our whole plan together, because sustainability is important we can't do one thing to fix it. It's got to be a full plan. And it would cost less to bring those support staff in than it would social workers. If we can get some of the work done and have the social workers feel supported, I think that that would be a win-win.
You're also recommending more male social workers because there's a, I guess, a lack of this. You want to bring more gender diversity to DSS. Let me ask you, though, since women are more nurturing than men normally anyway, and that would lead them to social work, how many males do you have as social work majors?
It's a the ratio is about 4-1. Well, about 80% of our students are female and about 20% are male.
So the problem starts with you, doesn't it?
And actually, I'm not recommending more male social workers. What I'm recommending is that they do outreach to that population, to males who might have social work degrees, because many times those folks aren't even aware that this is an option for them. They tend to, because the social service agencies tend to go to places where they can recruit female workers. So my recommendation is just to reach out. We really don't know if males are equal to, better than, not as good as female social workers.
But could they relate better in certain situations to the client because the client is a little boy or the client is a male perpetrator of abuse?
Maybe, but we really don't know. I would like to have more male social workers and then to evaluate that because there really aren't any good studies. There are too few male social workers to do it.
In 10 seconds or less, is the study ongoing or is it complete?
Any research study like this is always the beginning of a conversation. It is not the end of a conversation.
But it's the end of this one. Dr. Bob Herman Smith, Associate Professor and Graduate Program Director in the School of Social Work at UNC Charlotte, and Peggy Egan, Director of the Mecklenburg County Department of Social Services. Thanks both for the hour.
Thank you.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows, and podcasts, or to continue the conversation online, visit our website at wfae.org/Charlotte Talks.
Well, maybe that wasn't the end of the program because Peggy wanted to say one thing that she didn't get.